feels a little shocking to be taking my mask off. So, good morning, everyone. It's so wonderful to see you. There was a lot in what Soshin said in her encouragement this morning that resonated with me. This is the first in-person retreat that I've been to in a little under 2 years. And I did do a Dukkha ceremony down in Maryland when things were looking rosy at the beginning of the summer. Since then, it's all been online and buttoned up. And what a treat, and how fitting it is that this first retreat of mine should be here, which is like a second Dharma home for me. It's become that. And I really must express gratitude to Shokai and Mark for opening this wonderful space up for our practice, and for all the work that's involved in that. So thank you so much. And finally, Soshin said that you know, because it's been almost 2 years and we're all in masks and all these extra fussy precautions added on to the usual fussies and precautions, to go into this with an attitude of not knowing. And it just so happens that not knowing was what I wanted to speak to you all about today. I think many of you are familiar with the teaching of the three poisons, greed, anger, and ignorance. So when we're gently guided in the direction of not knowing, what's that about? Are we supposed to be ignorant? But that's one of the three poisons. So it can be kind of confusing. The simple answer is that not knowing that's being referred to here is not the opposite of knowing. It's a placeholder for something that cannot be fully expressed in words. And I'm going to try to get at it a little more thoroughly today through the story of Bodhidharma. It's a story many of you are familiar with. The famous part of the story is when Bodhidharma arrived in China. Buddhism had been in China for a couple hundred years before that, but the Zen take on Buddhism had not. So Bodhidharma, according to the legend, arrived and was greeted with great fanfare by Emperor Wu. Emperor Wu was a devoted Buddhist. You might say he was a very showy and professional Buddhist. And he was delighted that this great teacher from India had arrived. And so, as soon as Bodhidharma arrived, the emperor had him brought to him immediately. And, you know, Bodhidharma physically was kind of a disappointment. It kind of looked like a shabby old man. Not like anyone here, of course. The emperor said, well, you know, I'm a great practitioner of Buddhism, and I've endowed this monastery and that monastery, and all the other monasteries in China have been benefited by me, and I lecture on this and I lecture on that. How much merit have I attained? Bodhidharma said, no merit. Well, the emperor was not used to getting responses like this. He got sort of hot under the collar. He said, who are you? Bodhidharma said, I don't know. I don't know. So that was the probably the most famous example of I don't know. Now, obviously, he didn't mean that he didn't know that he was Bodhidharma and that he just arrived on a long trip from India. He didn't mean he didn't know that he was in China. He wasn't ignorant. He wasn't stupid. So what does it mean not to know who you are? Well, it means not to know in the conventional sense of knowing, and to know in a different way. Now, our dualistic minds, we think, well, in order to get to that different way, we need to throw our usual way of knowing out the window, our conventional way, the workings of our discursive intellect, throw them out the window. That's what we need to do. And we waste a lot of energy on our cushions trying to keep our brains from pumping out thought, which is what they're designed to do. We fall into the delusion of thinking that if our brains are pumping out thoughts, we're farther from something. And if they're pumping out way fewer thoughts, then we're getting closer to something. In other words, we think we know. We think there's a fixed point that we can aim ourselves toward, a target that we can hit. And if our brains are pumping out thoughts, our aim is off, and we're getting farther from the target. And fewer thoughts, we're getting closer to the bullseye. We could wait a long time before we hit that bullseye. Why? Well, because we're not ever separate from the bullseye. There's no bullseye out there to hit. And thinking that there is one, and thinking that we know what it looks like, just makes us feel more and more separate from the deepest part of ourselves. Whereas not knowing is taking a different approach. And the second part of the Bodhidharma story really illustrates that approach beautifully. So the not knowing, the true not knowing, really begins when Bodhidharma, who'd had every intention of staying in the city and hanging out with the Buddhist emperor, suddenly it didn't compute for him. He saw that he couldn't do anything. And so he left. He didn't know where he was going. He's a stranger in town. But he crossed the river and he ended up in Shaolin Monastery, not the monastery itself, but a cave nearby. And he did what the Buddha did. He went into the cave and he sat for 9 years and faced the wall. Now we begin to encounter the kind of not knowing that the teachings are pointing us to. He sat and he faced the blank stone wall. Well, what good is that? What's the point of that? We don't know. And yet, just as we observe in our Zazen practice, just as we notice that even though we're sitting very, very still and returning again and again to our letting go of thoughts and returning to our practice, even though not much is happening, everything is happening. Our hearts are beating. Our breath is coming and going. Our blood is circulating. Not because we're giving any of this stuff directions to happen. We're not sitting there and saying, am I circulating my blood correctly? How could I circulate my blood better? I mean, these might be good questions in another context, but we're not doing that. Just as the sun isn't trying to figure out how to shine, just as the trees and the flowers, what remains of them in the garden, aren't figuring out how to absorb the energy of the sun and use it for nourishment. Just as our brains aren't trying to figure out how to pump out thoughts. They just do, don't they? They just do, whether we want them to or not. So all of this amazing stuff, all of this life, all of this nourishment happens continuously without our brains or anyone's brain saying, okay, this plant, you absorb this amount of sunlight. There's no engineering going on in the sense that we understand it. And so when we let go of our conventional way of looking at things, or just entertain the idea of letting go of it, we immediately encounter the life we share with the entire world, the life that we share with all beings. It's our own life. It's ourself. It's not separate from ourself. It's just a self that's different than the information that's written on our driver's license. That conventional self is not excluded from any of this. It's valuable. We need it to function in human society. But if that's who we think we are, or if that's all that we think we are, how sad that is to be feel separate from all the glory that is going on, not only all around us, but which is us, which is us. So, when we sit still, as Bodhidharma did, nothing happens. Everything happens. And so it was with Bodhidharma. He had an imperative to teach the Dharma. And yet here he was, sitting facing the wall of a cave. And yet everything was happening. And there's a very telling myth talks about those 9 years. It's said that he stared at that wall so hard that his eyelids dropped off, and where his eyelids fell, the first tea plants in China arose and blossomed. It's a pretty amazing image, isn't it? When you think how important tea is to the life of Chinese culture. He didn't do anything. He just sat and stared at a wall. And yet somehow, as the result of his devoted sitting, tea plants arose for the first time. And of course, the Dharma is sometimes compared to tea. Have a cup of tea, Jeshu said to a new monk. So, there's a lot to just sitting. There's a lot to not knowing. We can see that sitting still and functioning everywhere are not mutually exclusive. And of course, at the end of the 9 years, what ended the 9 years was when a very determined seeker showed up at the mouth of the cave and ultimately became the second ancestor in China, received the transmission of Bodhidharma's teaching. So why is it so necessary for us to connect to this aspect of life, to the not knowing aspect of life? Well, the Buddha found that it was very important to do the hard way. Because as you remember, he was motivated to practice by encountering for the first time in his young manhood the reality of sickness, old age, and death. It made his life in the pleasure palace seem kind of meaningless if it was going to all end this way. So, how do you figure out the fleetingness of human life? How do you figure out sickness? How do you figure out COVID? Not that there isn't a great deal of research that can be done very beneficially, but that research can't tell you how best to live when so much has been taken away that we had come to rely on. How do we relate to sickness? And how do we relate to the reality of old age, to the sometimes slow and sometimes not so slow disintegration of our bodies and our minds? And how do we figure out death? How do we figure out any of the basic bedrock realities of human existence? You know, we see all the time that people try to come up with answers with happy talk. Think about it this way and you'll feel good. Think about it that way and you'll feel good. Well, what if you're not trying to feel good? What if you're willing not to know, just if only for a few moments, what good is and what not good is? What if you're willing just to sit and face the blank wall of sickness, to just sit and face that hard stone wall? Same with old age, same with death, same with all the problems in our life, the deep problems that don't respond to figuring, that don't respond to having the right attitude or the good philosophy. Can we just sit? Can we just not know? Can we just let go and let the current of life bear us to its own teachings and its own meanings with an open heart, with faith in the Dharma? Not faith that it's going to take us where we think we want to go or where we think it should be, but faith that it will take us to what is right, right in the sense that it's used in the Eightfold Path. Appropriate, just as it should be, as it's occurring. So through the story of Bodhidharma, we can see that a pure precepts are guiding us in that direction. Giving up fixed ideas of myself and the universe. This is the precept of not knowing. Is that sun shining, nourishing the whole planet? Is that me or is that not me? Does it make any sense to ask such a question, really? Giving up fixed ideas about myself and the universe, that I'm in here and that everything else is out there. And as we see in the story of Bodhidharma in the cave, bearing witness, sitting and facing that blank wall, sitting and facing the wall of suffering, the wall of all the ills in the world, all the things that shouldn't be as they are, so we think, plus all the joy, all the wonderful things, all the things we should be and like, bearing witness, facing the wall, bearing witness to the joy and suffering of the world. This is practicing good. And through this practice, we heal ourselves and others. This is doing good for others. This is what we're doing right now, today, by putting on our masks and getting together with old Dharma friends and just sitting and facing the wall and the wonder of human existence, just as Bodhidharma did, just as Shakyamuni did. It's an old and a simple practice, and it's wonderful to be here with all of you and to practice with you today. Just the Eno, please.
To